Show your patriotism with a flag from the United States Flag Service. They offer premium, high-quality flags that are made in the USA. Whether it's the grand old flag, your favorite military flag, or a historical flag, celebrate your freedom with a flag from the United States Flag Service. Go to usflagservice.com. That's usflagservice.com to see their selection of available flags. And then call 1-800-USA-FLAG to purchase your flag today. USA Flag Service. Fly your flag for freedom.
Now, the Jen Charlton Show on 930 WFMD and WFMD.com. Telling it like it is with your host, Jen Charlton.
Good morning, everyone. It's great to have you here with us. And I am absolutely lit up today about what we're going to be dealing with. There's a number of things that are really, really important coming at us. And as you know, we've been dealing in a five-dimensional war. And it doesn't look like bang, bang, shoot 'em up, but it does look like attacking our infrastructure. I just heard that Safeway was attacked, had a cyber attack a couple weeks ago. There are things happening behind the scenes and underground that you may not be aware of if it doesn't affect you directly and personally. Because, by the way, DNC and CNN, as my friend Commie News Network, you know, calls it, you know, they're not going to tell you. So if you're not listening here, you're not going to hear it. Or if you're not listening to some of the podcasters across the country, you're just not going to hear it. And I love podcasts, but my God, they can go on and on a bit, right? So I'm going to try and bullet through a bunch of stuff for you so you understand what's going on, not only legislatively right here in Maryland, and by the way, could be happening across, you know, the country and other states and counties. So right now we're dealing with all of the illegals that have come across the border. So stay with me for a second. They're infiltrating our homeland. They've been given asylum in the form of sanctuary state, county, municipalities. These sanctuary whatevers are effectively encampments within our homeland. Now, in these pockets throughout the country, i.e. Democrat strongholds, otherwise known as failing inner cities, New York, Baltimore, Chicago, L.A., San Francisco, they're a nightmare. I mean, people are defecating on the streets. But this is their sanctuary. Not my form of sanctuary, but okay. That's how you want to live. But what's happening now in Maryland, in Annapolis, in communist country, Maryland, with legislators who have, yes, been installed, not elected, because I know you and I don't want this. And I know the people in Baltimore City don't want this. And I know people in the black liberal community don't want this. They have just voted to have illegals who are embedded with terrorists. We know that. They have the information that they've come in through the southern border and the Darien Gap. They have known terrorists on the terrorist watch list embedded with illegals. Guess what? Your grand state of Maryland has just given them full access to our health care by buying into the Maryland benefit exchange system that was created out of the nightmare that is the ACA. And Maryland had to one-up it because we're the communist state of Maryland. So they made it so that we have our own exchange. Now, they have to buy their health care. And I thought about that. Somebody says, oh, one of the legislators, well, it's not in the fiscal note. There's no money associated with it. Yes, there is. Soft and hard costs. So let's look at it. Soft costs. Your insurance could go up because sicker people are in the insurance pool driving those costs. Hard costs. They have to pay for it. Now, who do you think is going to pay for that? NGOs. The same people giving them cell phones and baby diapers and clothing. And God knows, probably computers. They have all the comforts of the homeland. Now, here's the thing. If they love communist, socialist healthcare so much, go back there. It's an outrage that this has occurred. And by the way, they slammed it through without you and I knowing about it. I found out about it Thursday night. And I'm pretty deep in this stuff. And one of the guys says, well, I posted it. They're not sending me your posts. They shadow ban you as much as they shadow ban me on Facebook. So you can't expect that a post is seen and heard. Anyway, here we are in the throes of trying to figure it out, and I'm waiting to see if Senator Bill Folden's going to call in and give us an update on the status of things. But he was very good yesterday about keeping me posted and texting me on the status of the vote. And yes, indeed, it got voted in. I've got the number somewhere. They indeed approved it yesterday in the Annapolis Senate, passed 34-13, straight down party lines. Now, I want every Democrat who's listening to hear me, if they listen to this show. And if you know a Democrat, you need to tell them. Those votes do not represent them. They just don't. Because I know people in Baltimore are like, oh, hell no. They don't want this. So if you have corrupt elected officials through a corrupt election system, then you have what we've got. Lousy, disgusting policies that are harmful to you and me. And here's the last thing I'll say about this. And if we get some call-ins, I'm glad to have you call in. 301-694-9363. And then we're going to get on to money. You and I have a responsibility to voice our opinions. We have that right. It's part of our Constitution. And there's no way that aiding and abetting enemies through our healthcare system on our homeland isn't treason. We're going to take a quick break. I'd like to thank our sponsors, TotalWellFit.com, TotalWellFit.com, for your online wellness boutique, and Sweeties on the Creek. We're scooping now. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Welcome back. We're going to be having Senator Bill Folden calling in. I think he's down in Annapolis today. So this is pretty harsh. And again, I want to remind you that my mother was an immigrant. So I can talk about immigrants all day long. I'm a half-breed. So, secondly, we owe nobody nothing. We have a responsibility to keep our homeland safe. And aiding and abetting the enemy on our turf, funded by NGOs, nonprofits, and probably, I won't be specific, religious institutions who think they're do-gooders, who are actually helping our enemy be comfortable and taken care of here in our premises, is an outrage. So, God forbid there's a massive attack here in U.S., like we experienced with 9/11, where those people were embedded here. They were taking flight lessons out of our flight schools, and they were learning how to take us down, literally. So we must not be naive, because the globalists, the communists, they have a manifesto 2030. You need to go check it out if you don't know what I'm talking about. Okay? Go get informed. They have a strategy. And they do not want the U.S., the great United States of America, to prevail as its own entity any further. And they have a plan. And one of those things is our healthcare system, providing them a way to stay well while they're planning to take us down. I'm I'm absolutely outraged. All right, let's bring on Senator Bill Folden from District 4 in Maryland. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning. How are you, Jennifer?
Oh, I'm lit up. So I just want to thank you, and I told the listeners that you were just terrific yesterday, texting with me, and Thursday night when I learned about this, and I'm blowing up your phone. But the thing is, you've been responsive, and that's what I ask of our people, not just because I'm on radio, but because I'm a constituent of yours. And so kudos to you on that. Tell us what's the status of this outrageous aiding and abetting of the enemy on our homeland.
Well, they brought the bill forward to allows them to purchase health care regardless of their immigration status. And we made several amendment motions to try to stop this or at least make it to where it wasn't going to be a flood of applications. You know, their argument was there's no fiscal note attached to it because they still are paying their own share of the health care, and that rates would go down because more people in it makes it less expensive.
That's not true. It's a total lie. I got to say something right now because you didn't hear my – did you hear my opening? Probably not.
No, I didn't.
Okay, I covered all that. So here's the thing. There's no way that fiscal note makes it go down. These people are sick. They're coming into our country with measles and chickenpox and smallpox and God knows what else. And – there and all the children, which I have a heart for kids, but they should be taken care of by their own country in their own country. The fact that they're not taking care of these kids.
My health insurance premiums are not going to go down.
So the bottom line is, I do believe the costs are going to go up. And by the way, the fact that there's no fiscal note, Bill, is a twist on the story. Yeah. It's a twist on the story because it is going to get paid for by NGOs and others who are buying them their cell phones, clothes, baby diapers, and everything else they need. All right, now I'll let you go.
Yes. But we've made several amendments to try to address it, and obviously they all failed. There were a couple of Democrats that came over and supported the amendments. We wanted to make sure that they had at least some type of documentation, albeit not even for their immigration status, but for that they were at least residing in the state of Maryland. And because, you know, in Western Maryland, you could, it's a very thin part there at the panhandle of Maryland, and you could come in from West Virginia or Pennsylvania and just apply for this. And even that one got rejected to something as simple as requiring them to at least show that they reside in Maryland. So it just shows that the continual resistance to any real meaningful or just not even meaningful, but common sense approach to applying to these measures that they're, these radical measures that they're trying to bring forward. So they all failed. And then at the end, the party line, it was a party line vote. It was 34-13 and the measure passed, and it goes forward to the House of Delegates now for their hearings, because both all bills have to be introduced and heard in both chambers and voted out of each chamber, and they have to be in the same posture. So we still get another bite of the apple, so to speak, but we've got to be ready to answer those questions and address them with our legislators and have them be accountable and answer.
There was something you said. Well, I remember common sense. There's nothing common sense about this. And so, you know, when they are basically trashing our taxpayers, the people who are here legally, legitimately working, earning a living, paying their bills, essentially what they've done, and this is what I said earlier, is they've created a sanctuary environment without calling us a sanctuary state. I fought that sanctuary state when Ron Young was trying to push it down our throats, and we shut it down. But what they've effectively done is come up with other bills like this nonsense to make us look, feel, smell, act like a sanctuary state. So therefore we're a sanctuary state, and therefore you look at our proximity to Washington, and we have embedded illegals in close proximity to our nation's capital. with terrorists among them. This is outrageous. It's outrageous. And what they have done is they've put us at risk. This is a national security matter. Now, my question is, what do we do as a constituency where we are right now to stop this in its tracks? What can we do, Bill?
I mean, what we've got to do is you've got to activate and you've got to reach out and contact your legislators and all your friends across the state and have them reach out and ask these tough questions. Tell them how you feel. Tell them you don't support this and that you would ask them to do the same. I mean, the reality, and the other part of this that's almost sinful is, you know, they're estimating there's about 100,000 illegal immigrants, believe it or not, in the state of Maryland. And their estimate is that, you know, there might only be 4,000 to 6,000 that take advantage of this, right? Regardless. But, you know, we have 54,000 state employees that were promised prescription health care when they retired. And some of these, to include, like, the state police prior to 1986, if you were hired before 1986, you didn't pay into Social Security because they made their own retirement plan that included this component. And now, you know, the state has, in their infinite wisdom, in 2011, changed that to a measure that is now coming to be that these 54,000 state employees will now have to pay for higher priced premiums for their prescription health care because they took away the provision and basically are going back on their promise. You know, and their promise, when you're hired and you work for these entities, a promise made should be a promise kept. And they are not doing that. They're failing our state employees who have paid into FICA, who've paid into the retirement, have paid into the state. And these people are coming in to our state illegally, never paid into anything, and why? And they're gonna we're gonna offer them health care, and we're gonna offer them the opportunity to pay for this health care on their own, as they say. But the idea is that they've done nothing to help build our state, build our country, and now we're having them come in here. We're de-incentivizing people to do the right things of becoming a U.S. citizen as an immigrant.
Okay, because so there's so much in what you, Bill, there's so much in what you said. So first of all, there are things called soft costs, and those soft costs are the impacts on those other constituents who are having to incur higher costs for their care. Look, there's only so much money. There was a gal who's uber liberal, newer through the state of Maryland. She was an employee at the state. And I said to her, I said, there's one thing you and I can agree on. She said, what's that? I said, there will never be enough money. She said, we can agree on that. I said, perfect. So they're going to move that money around because there's only so much, unless, of course, you're Biden and you start printing it in the basement and trashing the dollar, which is a conversation we're going to have in the next half hour. But this paying for health care, criminals have funding. This is the thing to remember. And if you're illegal breaking into our country, you're inherently a criminal. There's no way to sugarcoat that. You broke the laws to get in here. So if you're a criminal, you have funding through NGOs, the Catholic Church, other institutions that think they're doing good when actually what they're doing is perpetuating this crime against U.S. citizens and legal residents, people who are legally able to be here, right? So the paying for health care will get covered. Terrorists have a fund. I think his name is Soros. But, you know, the point is they have money. They'll get the money they need to buy into our health care system. Next thing you know, they'll trash that and we'll all be out of health care. That's where this slippery slope is going. Bill, final thoughts?
Look, I really appreciate you, you know, being a champion of this. I appreciate you reaching out to me and offering up the difficult questions and the opportunity to come on here and kind of clarify what's going on and, you know, whether it adds to the discussion to make people feel better or worse about it. It's the reality of where we are right now. And we've got to do better for our citizens and our countrymen first before we, and really like our veterans. we fail our veterans far more than we any the amount of good we're doing for them. And we're doing this for people that don't even have a legal immigration status. So we just need to do better. This isn't about anything other than that, taking care of home first. So I appreciate the opportunity to come on here and speak with you, and appreciate you, you know, championing this forward, Jennifer.
Thank you. Thank you. Senator Bill Folden, District 4, I really appreciate your time, your friendship, your call, and helping us navigate through this. Have a great rest of the session and keep us posted on anything else.
Indeed. Have a great day. Thank
Thanks.
You.
Thanks. All right. Bye-bye. All right, everybody, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to have with us a friend of ours. You know Natalie Abbas. She's been on with me many times, and she's into this crypto thing. And I don't know a thing about it, so I said, well, don't leave me hanging. You got to come in and talk about it. And she's brought with her Dan Herbert, who has become quite knowledgeable in such things as digital assets. So when we come back, we're going to have a conversation about banking and money. And the one thing I want to remind you is that there are some key dates coming up. March 11th, and the other one is March 20th. And these are dates where decisions are going to be made or have been made about how banking is handled. We are, in some estimations, we could be looking at 500 small community banks failing. If you remember, we covered it last spring. So, you know, there were a couple that went down. We're talking about 500. That's a huge hit to our banking system. So there's a lot getting ready to happen, and it's important that you're informed and prepared. We'll be right back. Do you want to experience wellness at a whole new level? It's time to make your health and wellness a priority and be your best you. Check out TotalWellFit.com for top quality nutritional and wellness products. TotalWellFit.com. It's a lifestyle thing. Welcome back. This is Jen. And we are going to shift over to banking and money. And it's really important right now that you are prepared for what's coming at us. And none of us have a crystal ball. None of us know when you're dealing with people who have ill intent. You don't really know, are they going to zig or are they going to zag? You know, it's hard to anticipate their next move. And we're in a time right now, therefore, that you have to be smart and calculated in how you divest yourself so that you're not weighing in on any particular thing. I'm not a financial advisor. This is what I've done in terms of my own wealth management. And, you know, but my advice is be prepared. Talk to a financial advisor and don't just allow them to sell you hook and crook their line of business. You have to be willing and be informed to say, wait a second, what about gold? Wait a second, what about silver? Wait a second, what about crypto? Wait a second, what about Wall Street? What's going on? Where are the emphasis right now? What are we dealing with? I'm 61, so I'm coming into retirement. I'm losing my earning years, right? My earning years are only so much more. So if you're 20, 40 something, God bless you. You know, you've got some time on your hands to navigate through what's coming at us. But for those of us who are 55 plus, you really, really need to be smart about how you prepare. So that being said, I want to give us an education on cryptocurrency. And the person I'm going to bring on is Dan Herbert. Dan is a local, well-known guy, well loved by many, and otherwise known as Hollywood. He looks so handsome. So he's going to share with us a little bit about crypto. And I'd like to start, Dan. So good morning.
Good morning, Jen.
Yeah, it's great to have you. Now, let's talk a little bit about why did you get interested in crypto to begin with, briefly?
Great question. 2020, 2021, just randomly started hearing about it, probably even on this radio station.
Okay.
And then that piqued my interest, started to do some Google searches, asked friends if they knew anything about it, what was it. Hardly anybody did. Hardly anybody knew as recently as 3 to 4 years ago. So I just decided to investigate it, tune into some podcasts, do some YouTube searches for people, and try, and also to try to be a little bit discerning, because a lot of it can be kind of spammy and trying to get you to buy into their programs.
Yeah, sometimes you don't know if somebody's a crook. New question, what is digital currency? Can you explain it, please?
Well, currency is what we've all agreed, the function of money, to back up to what money actually is. So money...
trading for goods and services.
Yeah, maintain, money has six characteristics, and it, the U.S. dollar satisfies those. And so we agree on the U.S. dollar's acceptability amongst us, its divisibility, its durability, its portability, its limited supply, and its uniformity. Those are the six characteristics. Several of them are probably more important than the others, but if something, a utility, becomes a utility like money, that's, those are the characteristics that it's satisfying.
Interesting.
And I would make the case that a digital asset like Bitcoin not only satisfies those six characteristics, but is superior to the U.S. dollar. It may not have the same, for example, acceptability in our culture yet. But with regard to its divisibility, its uniformity, its portability, it's vastly superior to what we call money or fiat currency.
Does it have a limited supply?
Yeah, Bitcoin has a total of 21 million Bitcoin. That's all that will ever be on the network. Right now, there's a little over 19 million in circulation. It will continue to be introduced until, I believe, the last Bitcoin will be mined sometime around 2040. So for all intent and purpose, by 2028, maybe 2030, somewhere over 99% of the available Bitcoin will be in circulation, as it were.
Okay. You said mined. What does that mean?
Bitcoin mining, that term is given to the process which involves time, energy, and effort to validate the Bitcoin network transactions. So there, Bitcoin is a network. It's software. There are about every 10 minutes, there's a ledger. It's nothing more than a ledger of transactions that gets approved or validated by Bitcoin miners who are on the network. And they're just doing exactly that. They're verifying each individual transaction.
Where do these people live?
Well, there's all over the world. And the Bitcoin network right now has approximately 80,000 full nodes operating on the network. Some of those nodes are listen only. They're not actively involved.
What do you mean by nodes?
So the nodes are, that individual computer has a full copy of the entire Bitcoin software code and every transaction block that's been validated since it went live in 2009. So for the last 15 years.
That's interesting. That's really interesting. And you're obviously deep in the knowledge of this, so this is great. What do you think are the concerns about Bitcoin? What are the fears, valid or not, that you have or others may have about it?
Sure. I think to a large extent, for many people, myself included, recently, the inability or the probably inability is the right word to accept or understand or give value to a digital item. Much of our life is digital already, has been for quite a while now. If you really reflect on how do you interact with your money, how do you interact with people, how do you communicate? For most of us, much of it is digital.
Yeah, gone are the written memos.
And Post-its.
And Post-its.
I got Post-its all over.
I do love my Post-its, but
so do I.
But so when you look at the, I think what you're pointing to is this tangible versus intangible.
That's what I hear when I, just most recently, this past weekend, a comment to a friend of mine was, who said, I just don't see what I can put my hands on. And that's true, but that's, if you reflect on your life, again, there's a lot of what you don't put your hand on. A lot of us own stocks, and we may be aware of what our company does, but when was the last time anybody held a stock certificate in their hand that, or a gold bar? I think that's not a fear as much as an unawareness, or maybe that's just going to always be a personal thing for a while, to the point where we start to recognize that digital is part of our lives.
Well, and when you talk about it, tangible and intangible, I remember years ago I sold custom clothing. So I had to walk in, describe a suit, explain the shoulder width, how long the coat would be, what the buttons would look like. Here are the 250 fabrics you could choose from. And I'm, trust me, it's going to be great for, I don't know, $2,500. And people look at me like, oh, I can't do that. I have to pick it off a rack. Well, good luck with that. You know, I can't make it to your specifications if I bought the rack. So there's some advantages that come with intangibles, but it's hard for us to wrap our head around it because we are a consumer-based society. Make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. So let's look at other versions of digital assets. There's Bitcoin. What else is there?
Well, Bitcoin is the big daddy. Bitcoin is approximately, any given hour or any given day, approximately 50% of the recognized digital asset market, which I believe as of today is about $2.7 trillion total. The second largest...
$2.7 trillion in dollars or
in US,
Bitcoin?
In U.S. dollars.
Got it.
$2.7 okay. trillion U.S. dollars. For example, gold is about $14 trillion, the worldwide global reserves. There's probably some argument on how many gold rings are involved in that. But the second largest is a network called Ethereum. Ethereum is a utility level one digital network that decentralized financial exchanges can operate on, applications can operate on. It's,
how do you spell that?
Ethereum, Ethereum.
Okay. So is it something where you would buy it through us? How do you buy these Bitcoins?
Sure. There are a number of different ways. One that we're probably familiar, if you do online banking and you check your Fidelity account or you check your Schwab account, there are exchanges. Coinbase is a U.S.-based out of San Francisco digital exchange. Kraken. Binance, which was in the news last year when it was sued by the SEC and its CEO and president was forced to step down. They are just general exchanges, much like you would go on Fidelity and look at your stock portfolio and see that stock prices are changing based on the daily activity. The exact same situation, but it's digital assets that you're looking at. Then there are decentralized exchanges, which just mean that the exchange is not holding on to your assets. It's just there for people to be able to person to person, literally exchange.
Give us an example of a decentralized.
Gosh, what's
caught you off guard? Good.
You did. Yeah.
That's all right. Yeah. So think about that. So would it be kind of like your cash apps and that kind of stuff? Venmo?
It's similar. It's not a great comparison, but it's similar to that.
Okay.
The Venmo or a PayPal, where you would actually see how much you have in your account, that would be true. Actually, mentioning Venmo and PayPal, they do both have crypto accessibility. Both of them offer the ability to purchase and hold it on that site.
So I'm starting to get my head around this. So the dollar, the fiat currency, the singles, the fives, the tens, the 20s, the hundreds, the $1,000 bills that I hold in my hand, those I exchange to purchase goods and services. Do you do the same with this cryptocurrency where you can literally purchase goods and services using it instead of Venmo or PayPal?
You do. The acceptability of something like Bitcoin as a form of payment, which was one of its primary by its developer, creators. The form of payment is exactly one of the primary reasons that it was developed. It came out of the 2007, 08, 09 kind of banking, shall we call it a crisis?
Nightmare.
There was some activism that was part of the development of this. They said, what kind of form of payment could be created and not controlled by banks where the person owns it, period?
Yeah, because government has always been the creator of a currency that's accepted, back to your acceptability point. Mm-hmm. So if you look at, you know, I don't know, rubles or pounds or whatever that type of currency is, one of the challenges is the exchanging of that from one currency to another. So let's talk about that. So there are these central bank operations. We have it here. It's called the Federal Reserve. Every country has a central bank. They are, at this point, highly controversial. Probably not as controversial in some of the areas where people aren't in the know of what's really going on. But if you're following what's going on in the country in this decline that we're in, central banking is at the hub of it. It's at the nucleus. So now we've got this controversy of digital, I'm not going to say controversy, but it might be a little bit, digital versus hard currency, fiat, where I can touch it, feel it. And central banking is trying to navigate through, how am I going to deal with this, right? How do we maintain control over our money as a sovereign nation, if they really care about that anymore? I don't think they do. I think we're going from a they're trying to move us into a globalist society with one world order banking system. So this digital currency kind of messes with that, doesn't it?
It completely messes with it. And the writing has been on the wall and really loud and obvious. One of the more recent situations was the SEC suing a nonprofit organization called Ripple that was a digital asset. And they sued in December 2020 saying, you're selling securities and you didn't register with us. And Ripple...
Let me interject. So that is an example of the overreaching of government agencies without legislation, granted authority by themselves. I mean, they grant themselves, I dub me, all-knowing. That's what they do. And they rip off people because they have to be in control. Those government agencies are totally out of control. I didn't know that SEC was part of that. Obviously, we're looking at some of the others. Go ahead, Natalie.
So thank you for, you know, the opportunity to talk about crypto, because I think it's highly, highly, it's been controversial because of the FTC or FTX, what has happened with them and the SEC. And I kind of got into it because of, you know, the litigation, being at Commodity Futures Trading Commission, seeing the struggle between, you know, Gensler from the SEC and Commodity Futures Trading Commission. So you see this pull and tug between the two agencies of who's going to regulate it and who's going to own it. So once they kind of figure that out, is it a commodity or is it a security, then, you know, they can kind of bifurcate it and figure that out.
What did they decide? Is it a security or
some of them, and then good question, some of them are, and some of them are belong at commodities, some of them belong in SEC. Now SEC was touting Sam Bankman-Fried over to Commodity Futures, asking them to regulate them and to allow them to be registered. Everybody was registering them and saying, yes, yes, let's do this. But the only one person or one agency that was not going to allow it was Commodity Futures Trading Commission, to their credit.
That sounds like a whole nother topic that we could get into, and we're not going to have time to dig further. But I appreciate that you brought that up, because I think there's more to see there in terms of understanding the different agencies' involvement. So, Dan, back to... with regard to digital currency and central banking, what do you advise people in terms of their current financials, and how do they protect themselves in a highly volatile banking environment that we're getting ready to go into?
Sure. First, just to make absolutely clear, I'm not a financial advisor, much less an economist. I'm just a guy, as Jen introduced me, regular guy.
Hollywood.
High praise indeed. To say that what I've done is I just wanted to be interested and educated about it. Crypto, to an extent, has to be willing to take the good and the bad. It was generated to some extent to be disruptive. This is why central banks and people like the JP Morgan Chase CEO Jamie Dimon have done nothing but rail against it, about how awful it is and it's used by criminals and terrorists and that's all. However,
you mean like JP Morgan Chase and the others haven't been?
Right.
Are you kidding me?
This is
good grief.
This is the point. And he's been pushed back, as he well should be and continue to be. Interestingly, JP Morgan Chase has a digital asset department.
Of course they do.
They have their own network and they have their own payment coin. The good and the bad, just to follow up on that, is that they wanted to be disruptive, but being disruptive, which they've been and which we've seen, was going to lead to there not being good regulatory, because there wasn't, and then fighting through a regulatory environment.
So who does regulate digital assets?
Well, right now it's sort of a combination. The SEC has been regulating it by legislation. They've been suing the exchanges. For example, last year they essentially came to an agreement, if you want to call it that. Binance was the largest crypto exchange in the world. They brought Binance to its knees, for all intent and purpose. A $40 billion fine, and the CEO was forced to resign, step down, and pay, I believe, a $4 to $5 billion personal payment. The SEC allowed Coinbase, which is on the NASDAQ, have operated in good faith, and then the SEC last year turned around and sued them for selling non-registered securities,
This is an abuse of power, using completely. The DOJ as their thugs to go after competitive markets that have been innovative. Now, obviously you want to protect people from scammers. That's a concern. Right, and that's more in the consumer protection side than anything. But when you look at comparing like Bitcoin to the JP Morgan Chase, just because I think of it like car lines. You've got your Dodge, you've got your Mercury, you've got your, you know, whatever, Subaru. So if you're comparing these different manufacturers of money, Bitcoin versus, let's say, JP Morgan, how would you know which one is safer? 50% of the people are using Bitcoin, so clearly it's got buy-in. You know, there's some credibility, so forth. But when a JP Morgan Chase comes along and, you know, backhands the other guys and then starts their own, that's very inauthentic. So, you know, on one hand, they're saying that they're funded by terrorists or criminals, but then they're doing the very thing they accuse people of. I don't understand. How do we navigate this as consumers?
One thing that I came to understand, which I think is important for a lot of people to understand, is that Bitcoin, for example, the Bitcoin network, because those transactions, that block, that ledger account is approved every 10 minutes, it is a public network. Your name is not on each individual transaction or purchase or sale of Bitcoin, but your wallet ID is there. That doesn't mean it can
be hacked. It's a unique number to you?
Extremely unique. It would take, it's a cryptographic nightmare to be solved, which is the only reason why it takes 10 minutes. It's the software is so well written to be able to be successful in validating it. That's an important part as a consumer is to understand, and it's ironic that you would get this type of narrative from big banking about how secretive. No, it's so unsecretive, it's completely public. The U.S. government, for example, last year there was really a story that didn't get enough news that they had recovered a huge amount of a hack that had occurred on an exchange. That would never have happened if it had been in like a banking. That money in big banking or the traditional finance system, that money would have been stolen and would just have been gone. The U.S. government would probably never have had the ability to go and find it. So the public nature of something like Bitcoin is important for people to understand.
Yeah, so there's two things I want to cover. I want to talk about social scoring in a second. But I also want to talk, I want to give people the definition, because I think that this is where we start to uncollapse some different things. So cryptocurrency, a digital currency in which transactions are verified and records maintained by a decentralized system using cryptography, you mentioned that word, rather than by a centralized authority. Decentralized cryptocurrencies such as Bitcoin now provide an outlet for personal wealth that is beyond restriction and confiscation. Accurate?
Bingo.
Okay, so when we talk about confiscation, I'm going to go to social scoring. One of the challenges we have is certain companies like JP Morgan Chase and some of these others are now saying that if you don't play ball the way we want you to play ball, if you don't live your life the way we want you to live your life, if you're not buying into certain modalities and thinking, we're going to ding you. We're going to give you a bad social scoring. And oh, by the way, they may even come in and confiscate the money like they did when they debanked most recently here in Frederick, Machine Gun Nest. And I believe that was PNC. So whatever the point is, when government agencies do their thing, overreach, come after us because they want to control us, and they're using different agencies to do their bidding, including the Department of Justice and the SEC, this is no longer a democratic republic. This is what I want people to get. So this is about freedom, and everybody right now, we're going to come back. We're going to do more shows on digital currency because there's so much to learn. And I really want to thank Dan Herbert and Natalie Abbas for being here and helping us navigate what does it look like. Look at March 11th. There's a sunsetting of a policy that was put in place as a result of COVID that's sunsetting on March 11th. That's going to have a huge impact on banking. We'll cover it some more. Also, March 20th, the Federal Reserve is going to be voting on whether to raise or lower our interest rates, and that's going to affect the value of the dollar and other such investments. So Wall Street could be hit hard. Banks could be shut down. It could be ugly. Everybody, have a great week. This is Jen Charlton. Thank you. We'll see you next Saturday morning right here at 9 a.m.